All right, welcome back to the TKO Show. Thanks all your texts and calls on scams and things that you've either experienced or been a part of or avoided. The more we talk about that and spread the word, the more conversations we have with family members and friends, and the more we avoid them ourselves, right, to become more aware. We're going to talk about the sex trade industry. So prostitution, interestingly enough, in Washington, there's a fight going on to decriminalize prostitution. We know that only in Nevada, out in the county, that it is actually legal. So there are about 20 legal brothels. Now, the question is, what should we have here? Where are your thoughts and your views on that? So we are going to have this conversation. We'll talk about prostitution laws around the world. I wanted to bring this up a while back. Because I was thinking about it, I saw an article on CTV News talking about Amsterdam and changing some of the concepts, because it was the first female mayor and she was battling the red light district. And so talking about the red light district and human trafficking and some of the concerns there. And I often find when I think about it, I feel like those are two different industries, right? And one would be legal, one would be illegal, right? So I'm curious your thoughts on that. What if we were to legalize it and make it become almost an industry? I mean, is that the takedown of society, or are we going to make these kind of scenarios safer? Joining us to talk about this, Yelena Vermilion is going to have this discussion. She is the co-chair and educational director and treasurer of SWAP Hamilton, a part of the Sex Work Law Reform Canadian Alliance. Now, SWAP is for Sex Workers Action Program of Hamilton. So we'll get a chance to talk about that. Yelena, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
This is kind of like an ongoing back and forth. I sometimes go, I don't know where I stand, but I don't know if that's more of because we've blurred the lines of maybe prostitution and human trafficking. Like I'm feeling like it's a little bit like that when they don't have to be necessarily blurred. It's, you know, one thing would be legal and the other is completely illegal no matter what.
And I think it's also really important to consider the fact that all of the crimes of, you know, assault, coercion, rape are all illegal regardless of sex work. And those things can be prosecuted over like a general criminal framework as opposed to human trafficking specific. And there's much evidence that goes to show that the effects of the anti-human trafficking movement has deeply negatively impacted sex workers and their ability to seek safety in their work. So I guess I could just tell you a bit about what decrim is, if that's all right.
Yeah.
Sounds good. So like it's often confused by people because the word decriminalization has been co-opted over the years, even to the extent that people who are prohibitionists or abolitionists, people that want to eliminate prostitution being practiced altogether, will argue that sex workers are decriminalized under the current sex work laws, which is the Protections of the Community and Exploited Persons Act, also known as C-36, which came after the Harper government instilled it. So Amy Leibovich, Valerie Scott, and Terry Jean Bedford all did the Supreme Court of Canada challenge to some of the provisions of the previous laws, and they were replaced after an almost one-year period of no laws pertaining to sex work on the books, and that was replaced with the PCEPA. So it does... we have found that the PCEPA creates the same harms to sex workers as the previous laws did that were struck down constitutionally by the Supreme Court of Canada as being harmful to sex workers. And these laws in specific that we are talking about are the criminalization of communicating to provide sexual services, Section 213, the criminalization of third parties, also known as the material benefits and procuring clauses, Section 286.2 and 286.3, the criminalization of the purchase of sex or clients, Section 286.1, subsections 1 and 2, and the criminalization of advertising, Section 286.4 and Section 286.5. So these are multiple areas.
Okay, so I'm sorry to interrupt. So in layman's terms, where are we? Like, can I sell my body for sex at this point and be arrested or not arrested? Or does the man get arrested? And I, like, where are we in, like, basic terms?
Of course. So in the way that is easy to explain, effectively, people who sell their own sexual services are not criminalized. However, in effect, police can still arrest sex workers under the third party clause, you know, erroneously saying that they have advertised either for themselves or if they have helped another sex worker in an administrative, you know, context. Like, let's say you have a friend who doesn't have money on her credit card to put up an ad and you ask your friend to put up an ad. You are now a human trafficker or potentially liable criminally under that third party clause. So selling sexual services is legal. Purchasing is illegal. The client would be arrested. And also third party. So this means anybody that a sex worker hires for safety. Like if I hired a bodyguard or if I hired someone to develop a website for me, if I hired a photographer, those people could also be criminalized.
Because they would like fall into the pimp category, so to speak?
Yeah, like, they would be assumed to be living off the avails of prostitution or materially benefiting from prostitution. And these laws are insidious because it is based in a moral proposition that sex work is inherently violent and sex work is inherently exploitative to women. But this is not not the correct stance or objective stance to have. You know, first of all, when you have the context of Canada, where we have so many missing and murdered Indigenous women, the statistics show that Indigenous women and girls are at high risk for violence, but not for trafficking. So the presumption that Indigenous women and girls experience trafficking more disproportionately is reinforced by the racism of Canada. So a lot of the times these laws are meant in the spirit of the letter to protect people that they consider, you know, vulnerable or of a marginalized group. But ultimately the laws, as they are enforced by police services and police, you know, the Canadian Alliance for Sex Work Law Reform has consulted with police forces across Canada. And law enforcement report to us that there is an inconsistency in the messages they're receiving, and they're not sure really how to help sex workers, and that the law is telling them to harass their clients. And so the police officers who, like, were awake to this Bedford decision heard that criminalization makes working conditions for sex workers more dangerous. And they also heard that it is safer to work indoors for sex workers. So there is a sort of like an internal confusion, and it also comes down to individual values. You know, a police officer who maybe believes in the right of a sex worker to have safe working conditions and to not be criminalized is less likely to arrest that sex worker for doing that work, as opposed to someone who maybe has an interest in harming that sex worker, raping that sex worker, or in another way punishing her for, you know, making a choice to engage in the sex trade.
So what do you feel needs to happen?
Well, in a few terms, we need to remove like sex work specific criminal provisions. So that specifically, again, laws prohibiting communicating and purchasing, laws related to third parties, such as the material benefits and procuring clauses, and the laws prohibiting advertising. And we need to use the existing criminal laws and general application of these laws to address violence and exploitation in the sex industry. These types of violence that sex workers experience are more effectively addressed through general criminal prohibitions on abusive activities than through stigmatizing sex work-specific laws. And we would also caution against the overuse and misapplication of anti-trafficking laws, which often affects marginalized groups such as immigrant or migrant workers, as well as, racialized people. And we would also encourage that we apply a labor framework that encourages the provincial and territorial legislation, including employment standards and occupational and health and safety law, to address exploitation in the sex industry, because ultimately the, you know, OHSA and employment standards work specifically, you know, to prevent things such as low wages, arbitrary termination, so forth. And this would be including sex workers in that as well.
And so it would have to be, we need like a framework, because you can't just, you know, I don't know if it's one of those things where we can't just decriminalize and then it's just, everything is just.
Consultation would have to happen.
Yeah,
of course.
That
is a part of it.
Definitely. Yeah, because I would be fearful, you know, if it was decriminalized. I just would be fearful what to happen if we don't have anything in place. Like that would be more. of a concern. Like, there would have to be some sort of standard, like, of where you work and making sure you have a license or whatnot. Because I think dancers...
That would be legalization. That is actually very different from decriminalization. So we do not hold the position of legalization. Mandatory testing, for example, would be... and mandatory condom use, for example, could be... enforced legally under legalization. And mandatory testing is often based on, like, the fear or misperception of sex workers as being vectors of HIV or other sexually transmitted or bloodborne infections, which is not based in evidence. And sex workers are generally more aware of sexual health than others. So unless, and we, the position of the sex work law reform is that unless sex mandatory testing, which would be probably proposed under legislation legalization instead of decriminalization, unless they're mandatory for all sexually active people, they shouldn't be mandatory just for sex workers. And beyond, take this out of the context of sex work, mandatory testing would be is coercive and it's an unethical medical practice. So ultimately, we would want to be promoting a framework that is in consultation with sex workers and sex workers group. The Canadian Alliance for Sex Work Law Reform represents thousands of sex workers across Canada. We have just under 30 partner groups, the Sex Workers Action Network of Waterloo and the Sex Workers Action Program of Hamilton, both of which I represent, are members of that group. And we're also members of the Global Alliance for Sex Work Law Reform. The Global Alliance for Sex Work projects, which is a global alliance as opposed to a Canadian-specific alliance. So we are able to access data and evidence, research-based evidence, from across the globe that has been used to support this position. And of course, we would want to be in consultation with lawmakers, with politicians, and people to ensure that not only are sex workers being protected, but that there is a public health interest as well. Because what people don't often know is that data from New Zealand shows under a decriminalization model that sex workers actually, when emboldened and allowed to seek safety in their working conditions, reduce and prevent the amount of hepatitis C and HIV infection.
Yeah, that's where I'd be curious. If we had some sort of regulation, could it be potentially safer? Yelena, thank you so much for your time. Yelena Vermillion, the co-chair and educational director and treasurer of SWAP Hamilton and part of the Sex Work Law Reform Canadian Alliance.